Hey everyone, welcome back. We're diving deep today into King David, specifically 2 Samuel chapters 8 through 10.
Yeah, we've got Dr. Chisholm's lecture to guide us.
He's really insightful on this. It's kind of like we're seeing a highlight reel of David's journey, starting strong, powerful king, dot compassionate friend.
But then by the end of chapter 10,
it's like, what's he going to get into?
It's a fascinating arc. You wouldn't expect a king, you know, fresh off a covenant with God to have such a wild ride.
Right. You'd think it'd be smooth sailing from there. But life's never that simple.
Never is.
So let's jump in. Chapter 8. David's all about securing those borders. No messing around. Philistines, Moabites, Arameans, Edomites.
All falling before him.
Yeah. Talk about a show of strength. But then there's that one detail. Kind of makes you raise an eyebrow.
The Moabites, right. A lot of people wonder about that. David, the merciful king, why'd he act so harshly? Measuring them out? Executing 2/3.
Yeah, it's jarring, especially compared to typical Old Testament war practices, which Dr. Chisholm points out. I mean, it's not complete annihilation,
It's not exactly turn the other cheek either.
Definitely makes you think about the complexities of leadership. Even when someone's considered chosen by God, their actions,
they don't always line up perfectly with what we might expect. That tension between human choices and divine influence, it's all over these chapters.
Absolutely. Like, take the detail about the chariot horses. David hamstrings most of them. Why not just use them, right?
Well, Dr. Chisholm suggests it ties back to that core theme. God's power trumps military might.
It's a powerful statement. Almost like David saying, I trust God's protection more than a fancy chariot.
Especially in that time period, everyone obsessed with their chariot armies.
Big statement. And Dr. Chisholm makes this cool connection to Joshua.
Oh, yeah. After conquering Canaan, Joshua did the same thing, hamstrung the horses.
Yeah.
It's like, David's carrying on that legacy, valuing faith over military stuff.
I love those little details that connect to bigger themes. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But it wasn't all conquest for David, right? We also see that loyalty and compassion.
Chapter 9 brings us Mephibosheth.
Jonathan's son.
Right. And it's a totally different side of David now. He could have seen Saul's family as a threat. Easily.
He empowers struggles, all that.
But no, he seeks out Mephibosheth, who's described as lame in both feet, to show him kindness.
It's specific to God-like kindness, that phrase. It echoes what Jonathan asked of David way back in 1 Samuel.
The weight of that promise really says something about their friendship.
Profound loyalty.
Yeah.
But then chapter 10, all this kindness kind of backfires, right?
Big time. Turns into international drama.
Yeah. The Ammonite king dies, and David wants to extend that same goodwill to the new king, Hanun. But Hanun's advisors,
they get in his head, convince him David's messengers are spies.
And what they do to those messengers. Huge deal back then. Ancient Near East, that's serious stuff.
Shaving half their beards, cutting their clothes. It wasn't just rude. Messengers were seen as extensions of the king himself.
Like a direct insult to David.
Exactly. Dr. Chisholm gives that example from the Baal myth, Ugaritic, you know. Even messengers from gods were taken super seriously.
It's about honor, the whole social order. Way more than hurt feelings.
Totally.
And of course, this leads to war with the Ammonites.
Right. And their Aramean allies jump in too. Escalation.
We see Joab and Abishai.
Figures we've seen before, with their own, shall we say, colorful pasts.
But they emerge here as skilled military leaders. Big time.
A huge victory for David. They wipe out, 700 chariot teams?
And 40,000 foot soldiers. Those are some serious numbers. Reinforces that image of David as this divinely backed warrior king.
It does. But then, as chapter 10 ends, Dr. Chisholm points out this shift.
Oh, yeah.
Springtime, the time when kings go off to war, right?
Wow.
But then there's this phrase in Hebrew, the offline clause. It says, but David remained in Jerusalem.
It's like a record scratch.
Mm-hmm.
All this action then, dot halt. Makes you wonder.
It does.
Is David about to make a mistake? Everyone's gearing up for battle and he's just staying put.
That's the question. And that's where we'll pick up in part 2 when we get into the story of David and Bathsheba. Buckle up, it gets interesting.
Okay, so David's hanging back in Jerusalem when he really probably should be out there with his army. And this is where things get,
complicated.
Complicated is one word for it. We're talking, of course, about the story of David and Bathsheba. It's a famous one.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the most scandalous in the whole Bible.
It's a story that's just captivated people for centuries. Artists, theologians, everyone. And it's all about human nature, really.
Even for someone like a king chosen by God, you'd think.
You'd think they'd be immune to this kind of thing. But Dr. Chisholm really sets the scene. It's evening. David's up on his roof and he sees
Bathsheba.
bathing.
Wife of Uriah the Hittite, one of David's most loyal soldiers, too.
Talk about wrong place, wrong time. But it's more than that, right? You get this feeling of temptation. David, this righteous leader, suddenly...
he's vulnerable to very human desires.
And he gives in, doesn't resist, sends for Bathsheba, they sleep together, and she gets pregnant. It's a classic infidelity story. But then...
it's what David does next. That's where it gets really tragic. Instead of just owning up to it, he tries to hide it. Tries to trick Uriah into sleeping with Bathsheba. So it'll look like...
like the child is his.
It's almost Shakespearean, all this drama and deception. But Uriah, he's super loyal. Refuses to go home and be comfortable while...
while his fellow soldiers are out there on the battlefield, risking their lives. Dr. Chisholm really emphasizes that.
It's like Uriah, this seemingly minor character, shows more integrity in that moment than David the king.
Right. It's a powerful contrast. It shows how far David strayed from that ideal we saw earlier. And when his plan fails, David gets desperate.
He sends Uriah back to the front lines with orders that'll get him killed.
It's a turning point for sure. Not just a personal failing anymore. It's an abuse of power, a betrayal of trust.
How can someone be chosen by God and then do that?
And the chapter ends on this really chilling note. Just matter-of-factly says, after Bathsheba mourned her husband, David sent for her and brought her into his palace. She became his wife and bore him a son.
Like he's trying to pretend it never happened, sweep it all under the rug.
But we all know you can't escape consequences forever.
No, you can't. And in chapter 12, those consequences arrive, in the form of the prophet Nathan.
He confronts David, not directly, though. It's this brilliant parable about a rich man who steals a poor man's lamb.
It's genius how Dr. Chisholm explains it. David, totally missing the point, gets furious, demands justice for the poor guy.
It's almost funny, if it weren't so tragic.
Yeah, that dramatic irony. And then Nathan hits him with it. You are the man.
Boom! The hypocrisy, the weight of David's sin, it's all laid bare.
Total moment of reckoning. And to David's credit, he doesn't deny it. He confesses, I have sinned against the Lord.
But confession doesn't erase everything. Nathan delivers God's judgment. The sword will never depart from your house.
Heavy stuff. And then, to really underline that point,
the child, the one born to David and Bathsheba, he gets sick. And dies.
Just heartbreaking. After all that maneuvering David did, really drives home the point. Nobody's above the law, not even a king.
Not even someone chosen by God. So we're left with David, grieving. It's somber. Sets the stage for the last part of our dive. Can David recover from this?
Can he rebuild his life, his kingdom, after such a huge fall? Welcome back. So we're in the final stretch of our David deep dive. We've seen him at his highest, conquering kings, showing that incredible compassion, but then at his lowest, making choices that had those awful consequences.
And it's not over yet. Chapters 13 through 20 of 2 Samuel, this is David dealing with the aftermath.
Yeah, is there even redemption possible after a fall that big?
Well, Dr. Chisholm points out, it's complicated. We see glimpses of that strong leader again, but there's this shadow hanging over everything.
And it spills right into his family, doesn't it? The story of Amnon and Tamar. It's hard to even talk about. Amnon reaping his half-sister.
Yeah.
You have to wonder, is this connected to what David did?
It's the question, right? For centuries, people have debated it. Dr. Chisholm talks about that common interpretation, that it's a direct consequence. Remember Nathan's prophecy, the sword will never depart from your house. It's like, it's playing out in the worst way possible.
And it's not just Amnon and Tamar. Absalom, Tamar's brother, he takes revenge.
Yeah.
And then it blows up into a full-on rebellion against David.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to see how David reacts, the seasoned leader facing a crisis inside his own family.
He's different now, isn't he? Compared to that decisive, almost fearless David we saw before.
Dr. Chisholm makes that point. He's indecisive now, reactive, almost paralyzed by grief and guilt at times. Like, he can't lead effectively.
Right.
Because of his past.
There's that scene, so powerful, David fleeing Jerusalem, barefoot, weeping, while Absalom takes over. It's like that visual of the mighty king brought low.
It really shows you he's broken, humbled. Maybe that humility was missing before, in a way.
He's stripped bare, literally and figuratively.
But even then, Dr. Chisholm says, David still clings to God. He still believes in God's justice, God's mercy, even when everything seems lost.
And there's still some of that compassion, right? Even towards the people who betrayed him. He grieves for Absalom so deeply, even after all that rebellion.
It's like, he's so complex, capable of terrible things, but also this incredible love and forgiveness. He's not just a hero. He's human, flawed, wrestling with his darkness, but still trying to follow God.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what can we take away from all this? Why does this ancient story still matter today?
For me, it's about leadership. Even at its best, it's still human. Messy, makes mistakes, affected by our own feelings.
Like we saw with David. Chosen by God, but still facing huge consequences. But even in those failures, those dark moments, there's a thread of hope, redemption.
That's what makes it so powerful. It's a message for everyone, no matter who you are. We all mess up, fall short. But we can always turn back. Seek forgiveness. Try to live a life that reflects God's love and mercy.
Thanks for joining us on this journey through King David's reign. Hope you found it insightful, something to think about, maybe even a bit inspiring. Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep searching for those pieces of wisdom that connect us to the past and help us understand our present.